Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
On today's episode of All the Shit I've Learned Abroad, I'm back from India, and I've got a lot to say about it. Now, Steph did India many years before I did, so today we're going to talk through our very different styles of traveling through the country and reliving some of our favorite experiences while we were there. What's a tiger safari really like? What was our reaction to seeing the Taj Mahal? And the most important question of all, did either of us get Delhi belly while we were there? We get into all of these burning questions right now. Hey, Steph.
Hey, Andrea. How have you been?
I'm really well. I'm back from my epic trip to India.
All right. How long were you gone for again?
So I was there for 2 weeks. I've been back for 2 weeks now, but like, yeah, even since I was back, I had to go away for work. I've just been like jet setting all over the place, really collecting all those points.
Amazing. Well, this is an episode, I think, that's 7 years in the making, because I've been wanting you to go to India since 2015.
I know.
And now you've done it. So now we can actually talk about it.
We can talk about it. So it's funny because I think I even said in a few episodes ago when we did our New Year's resolution episode, I think that's the one we talked about India, and I'd always said India's never really been on my bucket list of places to go. And I do know people, like other, you know, avid travelers that also say the same thing, that it just is not a place that they're interested in going. But as we talked about in, you know, I think a couple of New Year's resolution episodes now, you know, ticking off one of the seven wonders of the world. And I was like, right, I'm going to do it this year. And of course, we know what's in India, the Taj Mahal. So I thought, all right, I'm going to just bite the bullet. I'm going to go to India. Even if I don't like the overall experience, mm-hmm. I'm going to go to just tick at least that part of, you know, one of my bucket list travel resolutions. Kind of like when we went to Egypt, we kind of went to Cairo just to sort of see the pyramids.
Yeah, very true. Know?
And I was like, if it's even a trip like that, where like India in itself, maybe I won't love it. So I went and I absolutely loved it there.
Yes.
It was like, and I think you even said, you're like, you could go and you could change your mind about it. And I think this was one of those actual sort of examples of don't judge a book by its cover. Don't knock something till you try it, because I had the best time. I was there for 2 weeks. I did so much in the 2 weeks. I did, and granted, you know, I know that a lot of the stuff I did was the touristy stuff. Like I have friends that are from India that live in London, and you know, when I told them the trip I was doing, at least half of it, they're like, oh, that's, you know, that's all the touristy stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but I know, but I've never been there before. And I want to do the touristy stuff. And, you know, I think we've mentioned many times, there's nothing wrong with being the tourist. I think we even did a whole episode on our favorite tourist attractions. You know, like I love a tourist attraction. So it was a busy, busy 2 weeks, but I had the best time. Like it was one of those where I'm like, I could definitely spend another 2 weeks here traveling around, seeing more of the country.
I know. And one of my favorite moments was when you were there and you actually said to me, you're like, we should come back to India together. Because I've been saying for years, I want to go back. India is such a big country that I spent just shy of a month there. And I felt like I barely scratched the surface.
Yeah.
So when you said you were like, we should come back here, I was like, you've already twisted my arm. Let's do it.
Oh my God. It's, I mean, it is, I knew it was a big country. And I think we do this as Canadians. When you're from, and maybe Australians to a degree, because Australia is so big as well, but, you know, coming from Canada, like, Canada is a massive piece of land. And so you think anything, like, smaller, you're like, oh, it's small. India's massive. Like, India is huge. And in my head, I just thought it was, you know, I knew there was a lot of people there, but I just didn't realize how, you know, like, when I was traveling between places, I'm like, wow, this is a 4-hour train journey. Like, it's huge. And so, I mean, I think I do this all the time. And it's funny, even moving from Canada to a place like the UK, which the UK is actually tiny. Like,
I know. What I was thinking as you were saying this. You're like, I thought India was smaller compared to Canada. I'm like, you've been living in the UK for 13 years.
Yeah, almost 13 years. Yeah. I mean, it takes 4 hours, I think, to get from one side of the UK to like the other on a train. Whereas, yeah, India, we were traveling for hours and hours on a bus, on a train. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot to explore. And I think one of the things I realized while I was there, I learned while I was there, is the cultures are so different in different parts of the country. And I love countries like that because it does make you, it's kind of like the States. Like, I know when you did your trip, you know, around the US, like, you go to different states and it's like you're in an entirely different country sometimes. Like,
absolutely.
So that's why I'm like, all right. So I did sort of, I guess my route, maybe I should talk about kind of where I went.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Because, and also for anyone listening, like, you and I did this two very different ways. Like, I landed backpacking, no plans, and kind of made it up as I went, where you, and you definitely saw more than me in 2 weeks than I saw in a month, just because of the way it worked out. But yeah, tell us what you did.
Yes, I planned everything, down to a T. I just thought going to a country like India, I was like, I don't want to wing it. I would rather work with a tour company that would book everything and I would just have everything set up for me, because it just, I think that was one of the reasons why initially I'm like, oh, it's not really on my bucket list, because I just thought I would be too overwhelmed there with all the people and you know, language barriers and all that. So anyway, so I kind of had a two-part trip. So the first week, and I said this in the New Year's resolution, I wanted to do more sort of animal encounter excursions trips. So I looked this up, and there's obviously tigers in India. And so I decided to do a tiger safari, like much like, you know, safaris you would do in Africa, but Indian safari. So I worked with a tour company there. They're called Nature Safari India. They were amazing. I told them the dates I was going to be there and set up my whole trip for me in Ranthambore National Park. So this is a, you know, protected national park where there's, you know, a number of tigers. It's really an entire tiger family kind of that lives there. They're all related somehow. But obviously tigers live, you know, in solidarity? In solitude. So
maybe solidarity also.
Tigers in solidarity. Tigers live solo, unlike lions. Yeah. And we'll get to that in a minute, my sort of safari excursions in itself and my experience in that. But so I did about a week, less than a week in Ranthambore Park doing safaris. And then the second week I did what's known as the Golden Triangle. And it's in the northern part of India. So it's basically Delhi, Agra, and Jaipur. And you kind of travel kind of in a circle and you make stops on the way and, you know, you see all the sort of sights and landmarks and that kind of thing. So the Golden Triangle in India, that's really the touristy spot. And that's the one all my friends, you know, I've got a couple friends from Delhi. They're like, oh, that's, you know, super touristy. But I'm like, yeah, well, that's how it is. So that's
literally how they market India to tourists, though, to attract them.
Yes.
So.
And I think it's a good starting point. If you're going to go somewhere new, be the tourist, go to the tourist spots. So I worked with another company for the second half, so G Adventures, which I've done a couple trips with them. They're an amazing tour company. If anyone's looking for like nice, small sort of group tours, G Adventures is super fun. And so I booked it with them. So I had everything booked and planned for when I got there, and like I was on a schedule. Yeah, so that was my route, and it was go, go, go the whole time. I think that like the only day that I got to quote unquote sleep in, I slept until like 7 a.m. Like everything I did.
Rough. Yeah.
You had to be up so early because travel time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was busy. It was busy. There was no winging it. Whereas when you went, yeah, you were backpacking basically. Like you went on your around the world trip.
Yeah.
With your tiny little backpack and flip flops.
Yeah, I was literally, the total opposite. Backpack, showed up to a hostel, no plan. Well, you know what? That's a lie. My first week, I had pre-booked a yoga retreat at the Yoga Institute of Mumbai. Mm-hmm. So I did that for the first week, which was actually really good for me because that got me settled in, comfortable, more comfortable walking around in the streets with sort of a home base with lots of other people. And then it was once I left the yoga retreat where it was like, all right, here we go. Showed up to hostels with no plans. Meeting other tourists and coat riding. What's it called? Coattailing?
Riding their coattails.
And I was like riding the coattails of other backpackers who did the research.
Yeah. And I think, do you know what? That's kind of a good execution strategy. If you are going to go to India solo, that is the one. That's actually what I would probably do that even now in my 30s. If I was going to go alone, I would go stay in a hostel to meet people. To be able to like travel around with versus, you know, I think we said this in many episodes. As I get older, I love, you know, I do like a nice comfortable hotel. I can afford it. But this would be more a sort of practical reason to stay in a hostel for me. And I would not be opposed to like sharing, you know, with other people if it meant I could meet people and kind of hang out with them while I'm there and just feel more comfortable walking around. You know, it is it's a very overwhelming country.
Yeah.
It is. It really... I mean, I think the first day I sort of walked around Delhi, it does kind of take over all your senses in good ways and bad ways, you know, like
it's just so different.
It is very it's one of those, you know, you want to talk about culture shock. It'll give you culture shock, especially if you haven't traveled a whole lot before, but not in a bad way. It's just different. It's just, you know, the way that they live versus, you know, how we live. And so I think it helps being with people and kind of experiencing that together versus being on your own and feeling a little bit out of sorts. I know I kind of did that years ago when I went to Morocco by myself. And that's kind of the feeling that I imagine I would have. Yeah. But yeah, so we did it very different. I was staying in, you know, I wouldn't say like nice hotels. The company booked it all for us. So where I stayed for my safari, that was really nice. This was it was called Tiger Den Resort, you know, very cliche name, but they were lovely. They would set up the safaris for me every day. So basically you do two safaris. You do early morning, it starts at 6 a.m. So I think, you know, when I kind of said there was no sleeping in, like I was up, you know, 5:30 every morning to go have a coffee and then get on a Jeep to go, you know, on a tiger excursion. So you go in the morning, 6, you come back around 9:30, you have breakfast, then you just sort of chill at the resort. And it was really nice. They had a really nice pool. So I could just kind of chill and relax for the afternoon. And then you get picked up again at like 3 o'clock to go on your second safari. And so when I got there, you know, the manager of the hotel, he was super nice. His name is Patrick. He kind of said to me, right, we've booked you 8 safaris. And I was like, 8 safaris? And all I could think of was when I went to Africa years ago and we did like a week of safaris. And I was like, oh my God. And, you know, to be honest, I was kind of bored by the end because, again, you sort of drive around and you're like, oh, okay, there's another lion, there's another zebra. And it just kind of, the excitement sort of does wear off a little bit. And when you're just sitting in a Jeep all day. And I thought, oh my God, I didn't even realize I booked this. And he was like, yeah, but, you know, 8 safaris, that's a good amount to do for tiger sighting. And I kind of realized, this is when I realized, I'm like, oh, wait, tigers aren't just, like, all lazing around together.
Nope.
You have to go find the tigers. And, like, you are out searching for them. And so the first couple safaris, I was in, like, a shared Jeep with other tourists. I met, you know, some other people along the way. And, like, I think the first two... we saw a tiger. I think the first one we didn't. And I was like, well, that sucks. And then the second one, we did see one. And it was so far away.
Okay.
You couldn't see it just with your sort of naked eye. At least I couldn't. The tour guides could. Or the Jeep guides. Like, they've been doing this for years. And so everyone in my Jeep, they had these big, like, sort of National Geographic cameras. And they're snapping pictures, and I'm like, I can't even see this. And then you sit there for, like, an hour staring at a tiger in the distance. And I was like, so I'm taking pictures with my sort of little point-and-click camera. Like, it's nothing compared to these big, you know, fancy ones. And, again, I came back after that second safari, and I'm like, oh my God, I've got to do 8 of these? Like, you know, because I was sort of just like, oh, this is going to be so boring. And then I looked at my pictures and I kind of zoomed in. I'm like, okay, there's the tiger. So now I can kind of see it in my pictures. But then as I continued doing these safaris, like, I realized the fun of it is not necessarily seeing the tiger. It's looking for the tigers and it's finding mm-hmm. them, because you drive around and then you find tiger tracks, right? And you're, you know, so the guides are looking at the tracks and they're figuring out which way they go. And so kind of like after halfway through all my safaris, I'm like, oh my God, this is so fun, because it turned into more of like an adventure.
Okay.
And then some of the days, like, we wouldn't see any tigers, but you still had like such a good time. So I think if anyone's looking to do a tiger safari versus, say, an African safari, understand the difference there, because you aren't just seeing animals everywhere, but the fun is the driving, like, and you're in these Jeeps and it's like you're driving really fast. Once they think there's a tiger, you know, if someone else is like, oh, there's been a tiger sighting up by the lake, they start like ripping through like the, you know, the pathway, and you're like bouncing around in the Jeep, and it's just like a lot of fun in that respect. And then you do see a tiger, and it's, once you do find one, it's worth it. So in the end, I ended up seeing, we had 5 tiger sightings, 4 different tigers. And that was out of 8. That was out of 8 safaris. And so I understood why, when you book with these companies, why they book you on so many. Because they want to increase your chances of seeing a tiger. Because it goes back, like, yeah, like the hotel manager was telling me, like, they sometimes get tourists that come and they do 1 or 2 safaris and they don't see any tigers. And then they're really disappointed. And, like, they'll leave the tour company a bad review and be like, there was no tigers.
How annoying.
It's like they're not controlling the tigers. Like, they're living in a natural habitat. You know, they can't force them to come out or be where they want them to be. So I had sort of a 50% success rate there.
By seeing, that's kind pretty of, good.
Yeah. So, and it was, you know, I think 3 or 4 of the sightings, it was tigers again, very far away. You don't get up close with them really like you do in Africa with the lion. I mean, the lions, again, they just are lazing everywhere. And you just see them and they're just sitting next to your Jeep. So the tigers are further away, apart from the last one we saw, which was really, really close. It was a cub. And these Bengal tigers are massive. Like, they are big tigers. So this cub was not even a full-size cub. And she was kind of swimming in the lake, and then she sort of walked by, and she walked right by our Jeep. And I was I was pretty close where I was sitting, and I kind of got scared thinking, oh my God, what if she jumps in? And the guides were like, you know, all these guides, they, you know, they've been there for years, and they kind of reassured us, like, the tigers know that the car's on the path, that's not their territory, mm-hmm. and that they also won't attack humans for food, unless they're starving. But they said all the tigers that live here, they're not starving. They are very well fed.
Or do they eat well?
No, like, they eat well. Yeah, like, there's, I mean, you should see, you know, we stopped. I did one of the safaris I did. The guy kept stopping, showing us all the deers and, like, the bluebell. And he's like, do you guys want pictures? And we're like, no, it's all right. Like, we were all, no, I'm like, I'm from Canada. Like, I was with, like, some Americans. We're like, we're good. Let's go find a tiger. So, yeah, there is a lot of food for them to be well fed. And, you know, they're not going to eat humans. But they said the only time a tiger would attack a human is if it goes into its territory. So, you know, if you start walking up the hill into its territory, then it might just become defensive, kind of thing. So,
yeah,
you know, they know what they're doing on these tours. So I felt safe, you know, even though there was a tiger kind of walking like next to our Jeep. And I'm like, holy shit.
I would have thought when you said you saw a tiger cub, my brain went right to bear cubs. Like, if you see a bear cub, you want to get the F out of Dodge, because that means mama bear is somewhere nearby.
Yeah.
The same. I think tigers, although I think the parents do at some point abandon their cubs, don't they?
Well, they don't abandon them. So since I've started volunteering at the
zoo,
you're a tiger
expert now.
I'm not an expert, but I've learned a little bit about sort of how, like, tiger behavior and how they, so this cub specifically was in, so in Ranthambore National Park, they have different zones. And each day that you do a safari, you book a, your guide or whoever books it for you will book you a different zone. And there's only a limited amount of jeeps that can go into each zone. Like they're very much, they protect the sort of environment that way. So each zone, though, if you think again, a tiger and its territory, territories are massive. They can go on for like kilometers. So you might go into like zone one, but there's only two tigers that live there because that's how big their territories are, and one doesn't really go into the other one. So in this zone that we were in, zone 10, there's four tigers that live there because there's a mom tiger, a dad tiger, and then they had two cubs. And the two cubs hadn't left yet to go find their own territory. So what happens when the cubs get old enough, usually when they're around 2 years old, they have to go find their own territory because you can't have tigers all living in the same territory, if that makes sense, apart from when they're cubs or if they're mating. So that's the same with our tigers at the zoo. Right now, we've got a mom and a dad that live in the sort of tiger territory together, but they have two cubs. And the two cubs, they turn a year old in June, but when they turn 2 years old, they'll have to be rehomed into another zoo somewhere in the world that's part of this Sumatran tiger breeding program, because they can't keep two male cubs in the den with the dominant male tiger, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they do abandon them in a way, but not until they're about 2 years old. And it's not really that they abandon them. It's just they sort of...
It's time to go on their own little grasshopper.
Yeah, it's a tiger's instinct to go and find their own territory. And what they were telling us, you know, one of the positive things is the Bengal tiger population is increasing quite a lot in India, which is good. But in this park, they're running out of space for these tigers to have their own territory. So they have to actually move some of them into other national parks in India. So they actually do transfer them around because otherwise they'll kill each other.
Yeah, they'll fight for the territory.
Exactly. So it's in a good way. You're like, okay, good. Like there's like, I have friends that did the same safari, like even 3 years ago, they saw no tigers in a week. Because they were so sparse. Whereas now they're saying there's such an increase in the Bengal tiger population that it's actually, you're more likely to see one now. So when I told a friend of mine, I saw five. She was like, oh my God, like we saw none when we were there like 3-4 years ago.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So anyone that wants to see a tiger, like now's a good time to go to India because the Bengal tiger population, it's like the highest it's been in, you know, I don't know how many years, but... So they have in this park, there's 80 of them that live there. And it's interesting because they all have, you know, they're all numbered and some of them have names and they're all related somehow, right? Like, so there's actually a directory you can find online that like shows you, you know, the cub that we saw, like it's, you know, their mom is, you know, this one tigress that she's 3 years old and she mates with this tiger and you're like, oh, okay. And it's, I mean, they're all related somehow, but obviously live separately. So anyway, so that's why it was, you know, when we saw this cub, the cub lived in the same zone or same territory as the mum still. So that's why there was a better chance of a sighting in that kind of zone than, say, a different zone where there's no cubs.
Got it.
So I was lucky that I got booked into that zone because you also don't know what zone you're going to get booked into that day. So it's up to your whoever's managing it for you. They can sometimes pull some strings. So like my hotel manager, Patrick, he's like, don't worry, I'm going to get you into zone 10 today because that's the best one. And he's like, don't worry. Like, he's like, I've been doing this for years. I know all the guides. I'll get you in. And so
I was just going to say, it shows be nice to your guides and be nice to your
and
tour managers.
Totally.
Hey.
And book with a good, reputable company because they know people that know people and they can, you know, get you into, you know, it was like the VIP of zones.
Kind of amazing. Thing. So all that to say, it sounds like you would definitely recommend the Tiger Safari to anyone thinking of going to India.
Yeah. And I think we said we were going to go back and do it.
I'm down. I didn't do that while I was there. So I am 100% down.
But I want to say as well, even if you might not see a tiger, there's so many other animals that are there. Like obviously there was lots of birds, deer, there's mongoose, there's crocodiles. So we actually saw two stray dogs kill a deer in the lake, like two just domestic slash stray dogs. And then as they were dragging the deer out, a crocodile came up and took them all down. And so that was like, I was like, and we didn't see Tiger that day, but I'm like, that was wild. Like watching that
happen. What kind of timing is that to pull up to see that?
It was crazy. Like our guide that day, our Jeep guide, he said he's been a guide for like 35 years or something. He's an older man and he was loving it. He was laughing, which I'm like, I don't know if this is funny, but like they see everything, right? And he was like, I've never seen this before. And he was loving it. I got some pictures and it was, and I sent them to, you know, this guy after. He's like, these pictures are amazing. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I just saw this happen. But you know, it's nature. But they do also have bears though. And it was, so you mentioned bears before.
There's bears in India?
Yeah, so sloth bears. And we saw a sloth bear with two cubs. And we weren't very close to them. And somebody in our Jeep was like, can we get any closer? And the guide was like, oh no. He's like, a sloth bear is 10 times more dangerous than a tiger. And we were like, what do you, and he's like, sloth bear will, and with the cubs, like you said, will try to take us out. They don't like, they don't play around kind of thing. So yeah, they do have bear. I didn't know they had bears in India either, but they do, sloth bears, and they're massive and they're scary looking because they've got big old claws. So
I need to look this up because I've never even heard of this.
Yeah, sloth bear. I don't know if they're in all parts of India, not sure, but yeah, they're definitely in the northern part in the park. So yeah.
Oh wow. Okay, well, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So who knew? I mean, that's, I thought the same. So yeah, apart from all that, of course you've got monkeys, not the macaques. Macaques are the really horrible, mean monkeys, but the langurs live there. They're the ones with the cute, long little tails. They all just hang out there. So yeah, still lots of opportunity to see a lot of animals. And again, you know, the fun of it is like the excursion of being in the Jeep, riding around, looking for tigers, looking for tiger tracks. Yeah, it was super fun. So I would highly recommend, if you're going to go to India, do a little, you know, do a tiger safari as well. It was
That's
great.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you'll have to do that next time you go.
Oh, it's on the list. It's on the list.
Yes.
Okay, so then now we get into, because what I actually know a little bit about. What did you do? So you started Tiger Safari. What came next?
So then I went back to Delhi. So yeah. I kind of backtracked because my tour starting from Delhi was actually going back up towards Ranthambore Park, but that's what I had to do. So I got on, I took the train. I took the train in India, which was, that was interesting. And again, I think our train experiences were very different. I got booked into first class on the on this train. And when you say first class, like first class to an Indian train standard versus like probably like UK is very different. First class is literally just a carriage with like fold down plastic bed things. And that's it. And like four people can sit in one. No, I think when you took the train in India, you booked probably, was it the cheapest?
I booked the absolute cheapest train, like the carriage in the absolute back that's cost just like a few rupees. And it was me and a carriage full of just men staring at me like, why are you in here?
Who are
like,
you?
Tourists do not travel in this carriage.
Yeah.
Which in hindsight, probably I wouldn't do now. But at the time I was just being so cheap backpacking. It's what I did.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And again, I didn't book any of this myself. It was the company I booked with, but I am glad that they did because I did look at some of the other sort of carriages and they just rammed, like everyone was like piled in and it was a 4-hour train journey. And on the way there, I actually had the entire carriage to myself so that you do have an assigned seat and your assigned seat is one of the beds. And so I'm being that, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed sort of tourist where I'm like, I guess I have to sit in my assigned seat, you know? So I'm in this, like, empty carriage sitting on the top bunk, you know, and but there's no one else there. So eventually I got down. I was like, all right, I think I can just sit on the bottom one. No one else is here. Yeah. On the way back, I got into my carriage and there was two men sitting on the two bottom bunks. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I sort of look at my ticket and obviously one of my seat is the one above. So I start kind of maneuvering my way up to this bunk bed. And the guy sitting at the bottom, he was like, you know, you can sit down here. And I was like, oh, well, you know, my ticket says 1B and it's up here. And he was like, that's fine. He's like, as long as it's not like an overnight, like sleeper train, you can sit down on the bottom benches, like nobody's sleeping. And I'm like, okay. And so he let me kind of sit on his seat basically. And then the two guys, they were really nice. They, you know, they were like, so did you see any tigers? Because obviously they see, you know, a tourist coming on the train at Ranthambore.
Yeah.
Like, and so we had a little chat about tigers. And then we were like sharing snacks like on the way back to Delhi. Like they were two really nice like local guys. One of them was from Delhi. Another, the guy I was speaking to was... he was some like, I think he said he was like a Hindu like priest or something, and he was going to some like religious ceremony. Anyways, they were super nice, so yeah, they let me like sit on their seat with them. But so the assigned seating thing is not really a thing unless it's the overnight trains, guys. You can kind of sit anywhere you want.
watch someone listen to this and then go sit in another seat and get yelled at.
Yeah, well, yeah, and this was
that again, would be my luck.
Yeah, this was first class, so I don't know how it works in the busier kind of, you know. But yeah, I don't actually know what the price difference was, because again, I just booked a whole package. So I think as a tourist, like, you know, they were, my tour guide was like there to pick me up at the doors of the train. They dropped me off. They carried my luggage on. Like, it was one of those. I got to the train station, even in Delhi. And it's a busy train station, but like, I live in London. Like, our train stations are pretty busy as well. Mm-hmm. And he was making sure that like I got onto the train, like I knew how to like find a seat on the train, and I'm like, I could, you know, I can take it from here kind of thing. But he's insisted on waiting with me on the platform, like to make sure. Yeah, like it was nice to have this all booked in advance where they do kind of look out for you and just make sure. So I can get it. I would totally get it if, again, I live in a busy city where I'm pretty used to busy train stations and, you know, figuring out what platform I need to get on. But some people, you know, I mean, Steph, you've never taken a bus in London before. So we learned, don't we?
We moved to the UK and I'd never taken public transit before.
Yeah.
Like that was a culture shock to me.
Yeah. Steph didn't know you had to like press the button, ring a bell to get off. She's like, why isn't the bus just stopping?
I just assumed the bus is stopped at each stop.
At every stop, and
we went by it. I'm like, what?
Why aren't you stopping, sir? So I get it. Like, it would be total, like, when I got to Delhi train station, I mean, it is overwhelming. There's a lot of people. The smells are overwhelming. There's monkeys running around. There was cows in the train station. You're like, holy shit. But in terms of how the actual train station worked, and how the platforms were set up and, you know, the boards showing you, it was very much like a London station.
Okay.
When we got to the station in itself and we're looking at the board, I'm like, I can totally figure this out on my own. Like, he, you know, in my head, I'm thinking like he could go, but he didn't. He was like, come with me. And he's like carrying my bag. I'm like, okay. Aww,
that's really sweet.
It's nice to have, I think, when you're going to a new country where you probably will experience culture shock, just having someone that can, quite literally, you know, they're a guide, and that's what they're there for, to guide you and make sure that you're not going to get lost, you know, you're not going to be stressed out. Like, so yeah, it was nice. So that was, I'm glad that even though I booked everything, pre-booked like private tours and everything, I still took the train. Like, I experienced.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You know, like public transportation. So yeah, but do you think if you did it again though, you'd book, you'd go the first class experience on an Indian train?
Well, like the difference in my income, first of all, is significantly different. So I wouldn't be stressing about it now. But yeah, I think I do a lot of things differently now. Like I think I actually would book a tour and see a lot more. I'm glad I did it the way I did in 2015.
Yeah, when you did,
but at the same time, I think there's so many people who say like, you know, why would you go to India? Or especially as a woman, especially traveling solo.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was, even though I tried to not let it be, that was in my head.
Yeah.
So when I started traveling around alone, I think I stayed in Delhi longer than I would have now, knowing everything I know. I stayed in Mumbai. I didn't go to Jaipur. I was too sort of hesitant. There's a lot of things I would do differently.
Yeah.
But hey, I spent almost a month in India by myself, so
yeah,
I have no regrets, and I'm pretty proud of that because a lot of people would be too scared.
Totally.
So, I would do a tour now to see a lot more.
Yeah, and I think the older I get as well, like I really do like, and I think we're gonna do a whole episode on this actually, but the sort of group tours or group travel, because again, I've done a few of these trips and I've had such a good time on every single one of them. And the more, like, I like the idea of just showing up and everything's planned for me. And a lot of the time, you know, they'll make sure, if you are booking like an actual tour, they make sure that you're going to see everything. You know, it is generally more touristy, I would say, like the stuff you will see, but that's the whole idea, right?
I see a lot of value though. And also, you know, booking a tour and maybe tacking a few days on either at the beginning or a week at the end. Cause sometimes as you're going, you're like, oh, I would have actually loved to spend more time here or to do this that's not on the itinerary, so that you still have those days
to do
other things. So you can do the tour, get comfortable, see a lot.
Yeah.
And then take a few to, then you can still have that making it up, or you can get the best of both worlds, I guess is what I'm saying.
Or do something kind of like what I did, where I did the safari first and then did the Golden Triangle, did the quote unquote touristy stuff, right? But yeah, so my tour, we started in Delhi. Like you said, we only spent like a day in Delhi. I would say Delhi, it's just like a city, you know, it's there's a lot to see though, but like, again, if your time is short, I think a day or two is fine. We did sort of a street walk, like a tour, and the company.
You did a street walk, Andrea?
Yeah, I did a street walk. We did a walking tour that they booked with, it's an organization called Salam Balak Trust. And basically what this charity does, it helps homeless youth in India. They can get an education and they give them these jobs of like being sort of tour guides almost. Mm-hmm. So we were guided by, I think he was like 18 years old, and he used to be sort of a street kid in Delhi. And he'd come over from, you know, the village that he was born in. His parents had both died and he came over when he was 12 and was basically trying to survive in Delhi. And so he joined this organization, and so now he's working, and now he's, and what they do is, you know, a lot of these former street kids, they give them internships. They sometimes do send them, you know, to other parts of the world to get an education. Like it's a really, you know, you're doing this and you know, you're also giving back to this community. So it was really cool. We got a little tour around Delhi, but that's really the only time we spent in Delhi. But we also, I think on the same day, went to the big Sikh temple there.
Okay.
And that was really cool. So this Sikh temple, you could go in, and you know, for anyone that follows or like knows religion, like the Sikh religion, they're very welcoming. So walking into their temple, like you didn't feel uncomfortable. They want people to come in. It doesn't matter what religion you're from, what background, they're a very, very welcoming community. And they actually cook, you know, the Sikhs, like Sikhs will come in and it doesn't matter how rich or poor they are. They all give time throughout like their week to come in and actually like cook food and prepare food for, and anyone can come in and have a free meal. So we went in, you could see like these women, they were all making bread, and there was men in the back like cooking these massive vats of like curry. So we got to like, they were like, come join us, like make some bread with us. So I was sitting there, you know, making naan with these ladies at the table. And then you could see they had this whole dining room with loads of people coming in and just having a meal and going. And, I don't know if they were all Sikh or not, but it was huge. Like, and it was a beautiful temple. They had music going, like, it was just a very cool experience. And I think throughout my whole time in India, we went to so many temples. We went to a mosque. We went to, you know, went to palaces. We went to all the forts. Like, there's so much culture and so many of these, like, beautiful buildings to see that have so much history. So there is, I think a lot of the time, you know, you think India and you do think of just homelessness or the poverty and, you know, there is that, but there is a lot of sort of culture and a lot of history as well. So that's what we kind of did in Delhi. It was, you know, we did a lot in a day.
And the one thing I was sort of dying to hear the whole time is obviously, so from Delhi went to Agra.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on the Taj Mahal?
So the Taj Mahal. So yes. So Steph was like on me being like, I need to know. Like your reaction once you get to. So Taj Mahal, we, our wake up call that day was 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Because we were leaving at 4:30 to get to the Taj Mahal, which the gates, the doors open at 5 a.m.
And it gets real hot and humid in India. So 5 a.m. is like when you're not going to die.
It felt so nice though. It was like, it was nice and cool. I mean, we were like kind of standing there at one point. I'm like, oh, I'm actually a little bit cold. But yeah, so we got there before the sun came up and we're just like, holy shit, it's so early. And so as we're standing at the front gates, like we're just looking, we're like, there's nobody even here. Like, why did we have to be here so early? But, you know, our tour guide, his name is Raghu, or Rags for short. He was like, trust me, like, I know what I'm doing kind of thing.
Anyway, do this for a living.
Yeah, this is, yeah. And so we went in and it was one of those, you're like, holy shit. Like, it is so much bigger than I thought it was.
I know.
It is, like, it's beautiful. I mean, it's one of those, you just can't really describe it unless you're kind of there.
I always tell people, because first of all, when I walked through the door, I don't know how I didn't see it right away. I had the experience where I just walked around the corner and suddenly saw it and was just like, holy fuck, looking at it.
Yeah.
And it is one of the, if not the only, one of the very few places that I found exceeded the hype for everything I'd heard about it and what I was expecting. You know, so often if you get this grandiose vision of something in your mind, you're a little disappointed. And the Taj Mahal is the one where I'm like, all of the hype doesn't even do it justice.
Yeah. Well, we had asked, so our tour guide, Rags, like, he does this. He's been to the Taj Mahal 8,000 times. Like,
yeah.
He does this tour all year round, if not, like, longer tours. Anyways, and I said to Rags, I'm like, do you get bored of this? And he's like, never. Like, he was like, I never do. Every time I, you know, walk in and see it, he's like, I'm also just, like, amazed by it. And I thought that was pretty cool. But, yeah, it's amazing. So we got there really early, and the pictures, I mean, we'll post some on our social, on our Instagram.
Yeah.
But the picture, because we got there so early, we got really nice pictures where there's nobody in the pictures. And it's just me and, you know, me, you see a couple people. But we stayed there until, so then we kind of walked around. And it is one of those things, as you walk closer, it kind of does lose its beauty. Like, it's, you know, they do say it's one of those, you sort of admire it from afar. And then, you know, it's because it's so big. And then you get closer and closer and closer. And it is just big, you know, you can't see the whole thing. But we were there for about 2 hours, I think. And by the time we left at about 7 a.m., it was heaving. It was rammed. There was people everywhere.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, I get why you got to be here, like, right when it opens. Because you want to have those pictures. And you can, I mean, don't get me wrong, you can still take a really nice picture, even if there's people in the background. But it was nice to kind of see it, you know, as the sun was coming up. It was kind of stormy that morning as well. So there was lightning in the background. We were all trying to get pictures of maybe the lightning, you know, hitting the tip of the Taj Mahal. But yeah, it was stunning. And it was one of those where I'm like, this is touristy, but, like, there's a reason this is one of the, like, the wonders of the world. And so now I can say I ticked off another wonder of the world.
You did it.
But yeah,
I love that.
I think you had asked me, though, like, how did it compare to Petra? Because I did Petra in Jordan a few years ago. Now, Petra still holds number one spot.
Okay.
Over the Taj Mahal. And I'll tell you why. And the only reason I say this, they're both amazing, but you got to work for Petra, you do a lot of walking to get up there. And so you're tired. And so once you kind of come around that corner and you finally see the monastery, I think it's the monastery. Is it the monastery or the, well, what? Yeah,
I've never
one.
Been. Yeah,
well, yeah, there's the two. There's the monastery, and then the other one where you got to walk up way higher. But anyways, the sort of the famous one that everyone knows when you think Petra Eddy, I think it's the monastery. But you kind of walk around a corner after you've done about 10,000 steps, and then you see it, and again, it kind of takes your breath away. But you're also exhausted. Your breath is actually already gone because you've done so much walking. So that's
so you're breathless.
So you're breathless.
Possibly because of the sights, but possibly because you're dying.
You're breathless and it's taking your breath away. And so just don't pass out. But so that's the only reason I say Petra still takes the number one spot. But Taj Mahal is now number two. Followed by the pyramids at number three. And then number four, the Colosseum. So I still have a few more to go, and then I'll be able to put them in order of how amazing I found all of them. I think that's all the ones I've done. But yeah, I mean, it's a must. I know Steph and I always say, like, you don't have to do the touristy things if you don't want, but the Taj Mahal is a must if you're going to India. You have to go see it.
I know. What a shame if you go to India and you don't see it.
Yeah, you got to do it. So that was incredible. And I feel like our experience on that was pretty similar. Now, you went to Mumbai.
I did.
I did not go to Mumbai. However, I feel like we had an experience in itself, or a similar experience when it came to Bollywood films, but just a different one. So wait, what did you do when you were in Mumbai?
So I did a bunch, but to that point, I did a day tour where they picked us up. They took us to the Bollywood studios. We got a tour of all the sets of different famous Bollywood shows. It was so fascinating. It's a bit of a shame. Obviously, I didn't know a lot of the shows.
They're movies.
There's shows too.
Is there? I thought they were all big cinema, like Bollywood is like Hollywood.
No, they've
films.
Got like Days of Our Lives style.
Oh, like soaps.
Bollywood
okay.
shows. Yeah.
Got it.
And so when we were there, they called a bunch of the actors over when they were in between takes, and we got our photos with some of them. And I don't know who they are, but apparently they were a big deal because there were people waiting to meet them. And just had this sort of whole day in Bollywood, and they took us into a private theater and we got like a Bollywood style dance. Like it was wow. They got us up and dancing. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Oh, it was a full day in Bollywood.
I would love to do that. Yeah. So I did something similar, and I feel like we need to swap. Like, you need to do what I did, and I need to do what you did. So while you got to go see, like, the filming of a Bollywood movie, I went to a screening of a Bollywood movie. And so we basically went to, like, a cinema or, like, a movie theater, where we live, depending on what you call it. And so, yeah, our guide was like, you know, who wants to go watch a Bollywood film? And I'm like, I would. And I was like, is there going to be English subtitles? He's like, no. And I'm like, how are we going to know what's going on, though? And he was like, there is absolutely no logic to Bollywood films. He's like, it's dancing, it's fighting, somebody falls in love, they have a wedding. He's like, you don't need to know what is going on. I'm like, okay. So anyway, so we went, and I was not expecting what we actually, like, what we walked into. So this was in Jaipur. And we walked into this beautiful, like, it was a huge movie theater. And I'm thinking, I don't know why in my head I'm thinking, like, oh, Indian movie theater, it'll be sort of, I don't know, maybe a bit more rundown, like, compared to, you know, the ones that we have over here. It was not. It was stunning. It was like an opera house.
Okay.
So we went in, huge, huge screen. And I can't remember the name of the film, but the star in it, his name is Salman Khan, and he is like
one of the most famous Bollywood
famous,
stars.
He's like
people faint when they see him.
Yes, yes. And it was his new movie. And we even looked this guy up, and he is not only one of the richest Bollywood actors, he's one of the richest actors in the world. Like, this guy is worth like $500 million.
Oh, it's, if people want to be fascinated, I remember doing, this was years ago, probably after I went to Bollywood, where they told us to Google the most paid actors in the world. Because normally when we see, you know, highest paid actor, they're showing us American actors.
Right.
If you look at Bollywood actors and how much they make, like Brad Pitt, all the things, the people we think are A-listers are like down the list.
Yeah. Because
they are making nothing compared to Bollywood actors.
Yeah. There is so much money that goes into Bollywood. So it was this guy's new movie. And so we turn up. We find our seats. The movie starts. There's still people walking around everywhere looking for their seats. They'd walk by. They'd just stand in front of you. Like, they've got ushers with flashlights. Like, it's just chaos. It's absolute chaos. And I'm thinking, like, when is everyone just going to sit down and settle? They don't. In a this Bollywood, like, screening, people go bananas. So the film finally comes on. Salman Khan makes his, like, appearance on screen. Everybody's cheering, screaming, standing up. I love this. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And then, like, the lead actress, I don't know her name, but she came on the screen. And there was, like, a group of guys, sitting in front of us. And they just start going crazy. They're like, wow, like cheering and, like, whistling. And, like, they're just, like, throwing money in the cinema. And I'm like, this is insane. One of the guys in front of us had his phone out. He was, like, FaceTiming somebody and, like, showing them the movie. Like, people were recording on their phones. I'm like, this is crazy. And the movie itself was it was so cheesy, but that's like Bollywood. Like, the acting was, you know, not great. The dancing was, you know, pretty bad, but like, rags.
Was it? I've seen Bollywood clips where the dancing is amazing.
I'm saying this guy, okay. Salman Khan, is known for not being a good dancer. He's not, he's not a very good singer, but he's one of those that he, like, produces his own movies. He acts in his own movies. He is the star, right? He's about 60 years old.
I am living in fear right now that some of our listeners from India are going to be like, don't you talk bad about Salman Khan.
No, we're not. People love him. But I've spoken to a couple of my friends from India here, and they were like, you went to a Salman Khan movie? I'm like, yeah. And they said the same. They're like, this guy, people love him. But he's like, he's just that sort of all-encompassing macho man, you know? And so, and they even said, like, the opening dance scene. So our tour guide, he said, you know, this was, that's what they released as, like, the promo. And people were just, like, taking the piss out of him, like, saying what a bad dancer he was. But, like, in the most, it's weird. It's like a love-hate with him, right? But, like, they had, like, these, like, really cheesy action scenes. And I was like, this guy's, like, the Vin Diesel of India. Like, he's, like, you know, the whole thing was just, it was so.
I feel like we're digging a deeper hole.
I wouldn't say
it's
that
all
unless.
With love.
No, it was. I mean, there were scenes in it that were just, it was cheese. But, like, cheese is not always bad. I like cheese. I was, like, sitting there going, this is incredible. Like, some of the graphics were, you know, again, so bad that they were so good. Like,
yes.
And overall, it was just, it was such an experience just being in the cinema and, like, watching everyone go crazy for this. And then we left at the intermission. They do intermissions during these films because they're so long. So we left after, and then we had asked, you know, our tour guide, like, what was happening? And he was like, nothing. Like, what you saw is exactly, like, what it was. He was like, a fight scene. He's in love with the girl. Like, they'll probably get married at the end, kind of thing. So that was super fun. But I would love to go to Bollywood to watch, like, see them film one of these and just see, like, how are they? You know, I would love to see a live dance scene.
This is what we should do when we go back together. Mm. We can have, like, a swap day where you go to Bollywood and I'll go to the theater.
Perfect.
And then we can report back. Sold.
I love it. Or we could just do it together.
True. we could just do it again.
Just because I did it once doesn't mean I won't do it again.
Sweet. Sold.
I feel like one thing we have to talk about, Delhi Belly. So.
Okay. I never got it.
Me neither.
Yeah.
This is what, so, like, everyone was like, oh, you're gonna get a bit of Delhi Belly while you're there. I was fine. I feel like I've got a strong stomach, but
I just feel like it's common sense.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Just pay attention. Like, drink filtered water. I had my blue light pen. Drink filtered water. Pay attention to what you're eating or ordering.
Yeah.
You know, just common sense.
But I guess some people do get it. Like, if it is new foods, even just, like, just having spicy food.
Yeah, I suppose I'm just apparently not very sympathetic, where I'm like, if you get it, it's your own fault.
Well, yeah, no one's saying you've got to, like, you don't have to be shitty about it. If somebody gets it, they get it. No one's looking to blame anyone.
I took 3 days out of my whole trip taking care of three British guys who had deli belly, like on the extreme end.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not unsympathetic in person.
Yeah.
But
no,
apparently I mean, from afar I am.
Well, like in my group, so there was one day that like half of them had like pretty bad like diarrhea the next morning and half of us didn't. We all ate at the same places. It's just, I think everyone's stomach is definitely different. You know, I think you and I probably traveled enough where we have eaten lots of different types of foods and some people haven't. And yeah, sometimes you might just eat get a bad cucumber and something you're eating. But it was a mix. I mean, of the 15 of us in this group, yeah, there was one morning we were all trying to figure out, like, what did we eat the day before? Because I was fine. A couple other people were fine. But like 6 or 7 of them were just like doing a lot of poops. A lot of poops that morning. But I think as well, it comes down to... you know, sometimes, a lot of times in these hot countries as well, like if you're not staying hydrated, like, you know, sometimes it's like,
absolutely.
Like, do you have diarrhea because you ate something bad or you didn't drink enough water in 40 degree heat? You know, like, I mean, that's the main cause of, you know, bad belly. But of course, if you're throwing up, if it's a both ender, you probably ate something bad. So, But yeah, I was lucky there. But I have to say I was curried out by the end of my trip. 2 weeks, you know, I was basically eating curry, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which I love. I love a good, you know, a good Indian curry with rice, naan, the works. But by the time I got back to London, I'm like, do you know what? I can't look at curry for a couple months. I was like, give me bland food. I want a sandwich. I want a grilled cheese sandwich. I want like tomato soup. I was craving, you know, just some really beige, boring food, which is what I did when I got home for a couple weeks.
That's like everyone coming back from Morocco too, where you're like, I don't even want to hear the word tagine for a very long time.
Oh, for real. I know. That's really how I felt. But yeah, I mean, the food, you know, you can't go wrong though. It was nice for the couple weeks.
Okay. So love that. The one thing, and I was so jealous because I'd read your itinerary about 4 times before you left and somehow I just didn't make the connection that you were going to Jaipur, which I really, that's one thing I wish I did while I was there. What did you do in Jaipur?
Yeah. So I can't believe you didn't go to Jaipur because it's known
as the
pink city. And Steph is the pink lady. Steph is everything pink. She loves pink. She's your typical girl.
Love a dusty rose.
She loves a dusty rose. And that is exactly what Jaipur looks like. Everything is painted in like a dusty rose pink. So like you need to go back and get some good Instagram photos. But yeah, so Jaipur was a very cool city. I liked it better than Delhi. Very busy. I think even while I was in India had actually just surpassed China as the most populous country in the world. And it really felt like it. So,
it does. Yeah, it does.
It's a lot. It's a lot of people. But we in Jaipur, we did like this walk down by like the spice markets. And that's very overwhelming. If you're going to walk down through some of these spice markets, definitely bring a mask because it's spices just kind of floating around and you're kind of inhaling it. So some of us didn't have masks and we were coughing quite a lot. But yeah, so lots of like shops like that. We got in tuk-tuks, kind of like rode around Jaipur. And yeah, just kind of explored like the city. That's where we saw the Bollywood film. But I did the sort of bougie thing I did while I was there. I did a hot air balloon ride over.
Yes.
Jaipur. So this was one of those optional things they gave us, you know, as an activity. And I'm like, do you know what? Let's do it. It was pretty expensive. It was like $280.
Holy.
Yeah. It was expensive. But I said, you know what? I've never been in a hot air balloon before. Let's just do it. So me and a couple of other people in my group, we did it. Again, a 4 a.m. wake up call because we were setting off into the balloon at like, I think like 5:30 or 6 or something. So yeah, it was, I would say, so there was a couple people on my trip that they have done hot air balloon rides before.
Okay.
And they were like, this one was a bit underwhelming because you are just kind of floating over farms and crops in India, over Jaipur. And it was beautiful. We saw the sunrise and everything. But in terms of scenery, yeah, there wasn't much to kind of look at. Whereas, you know, one of the girls on my trip, she had done a hot air balloon ride over in Egypt over the, what's the Kings?
The Valley, that's, I did this. I did the hot air balloon over the Valley of the Kings.
Oh, so you did that as well? Okay, so you've done it. So this one over Jaipur, you probably would have thought, because I would imagine floating over something like that, like Valley of the Kings, would be incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's what one of the girls was saying, you know, when she did the comparison. But because I'd never done one, I'm like, screw it, let's, you know, why not? But it was still cool. Like, there was one point we kind of were floating over, and it was around the time all the kids were going to school. And there was a group of kids that just started running under our balloon, and they were chasing the balloon, and they were, you know, yelling like, namaste, namaste, and they were waving at us. And it was really cute. So it was still fun. It was still one of those things, like, I didn't have a bad time, don't get me wrong. But yeah, for the price, I was like, ooh, this is hefty. And you
that
know,
is very expensive, because when I was in Egypt, my balloon ride over the Valley of the Kings was about, I think, $60.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what, like, some of the people in my group were like, we've done this before for cheaper, so they didn't go.
Yeah.
But it was still fun. Although, well, there was a girl that fainted in our balloon.
No, while yeah, you were so, up in the air?
Yeah, we were in the air. And
what do you do?
It was a big balloon. There were 16 of us. And so you have four baskets kind of spread out. And so we were in one basket, and then we just see this girl in the next basket. She just passes out, and her sister's trying to, like, revive her. And, like, she just keeps fainting, and she keeps fainting, and they're trying to give her water. And so the pilot, he was this British guy. He was just like, oh my God, like, I've never had somebody, he's been doing this for years, he's like, I've never had somebody faint. So he's radioing his guys below, like, you know, all right, he's like, I got to make an emergency landing. And so he's trying to get his guys to, like, because they have to follow him in the car, right?
To yeah, see where the they need to be where land. The balloon's coming down.
Exactly. And so, you know, we're like, oh my God, this is so dramatic. So, because we just got up in the air. So he's, like, trying to, you know, look for a spot to do an emergency landing. But then she kind of came to. And so somebody gave her a bit of chocolate, and then she was fine after that. So we kind of went back up. He's like, you're sure you're okay? So we didn't make the emergency landing, but it was kind of funny when we finally did land. So he's kind of looking for a spot. And I said to the pilot, I'm like, do you just land in somebody's field, like their farm? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, are they okay with this? He's like, it hasn't been a problem yet. But they do. They just sort of land in, like, someone's backyard, and they don't care. And then once we did land, you know, people kind of, like, there's kids that ran over, and obviously they're curious. And so it was really cute. Like, the whole thing was it was a fun experience. It was expensive, but I'm still glad I did it. There was nothing I regretted doing, you know, on the trip.
The thing I found most interesting about hot air ballooning, more than the actual experience, was the fact that all the hot air balloon pilots know pretty much all of the hot air balloon pilots around the world.
Yeah.
And they all go, you know, do that in other countries. And so I obviously did Egypt in 2015. And then when I moved to Australia in 2017, my partner and I at the time went up in one as well. And the pilot was like, oh, who's done it before? And he's asking. And I said, oh, I did it in Egypt. Oh, what company? And he's like, oh, yeah, that would have been da 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 da. Like, they all know each other because it's such a niche career.
Well, yeah. And they
and they
saying,
compete around the world. It's fascinating.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. So the guy that was piloting our balloon, like, he's just a contract worker, right? So the company in itself, in India, they just hire him out for the season. It's almost like, if anybody watches Below Deck, which you probably don't, Steph, but,
no,
you know, yachties, right? Like, they work on yachts. They just get called out to work on whatever yacht, you know, in wherever it's based. And then they go work there for a season, which might be like 2 months. And then they go home. And then they might go somewhere different a couple months later. So it's the same with these, you know, hot air balloon pilots. And so I was like, what a cool job. And he was saying that his sons are learning how to do it as well. And I'm like, how? And he, you know, he was saying he flies all over the world. He flies in Tanzania. I think he said Egypt as well. So he probably knows, like, your pilot as well, around England. So I just thought, yeah, what a cool job. But anyways, so overall, I mean, I had the best time. It was so busy. There was loads of other stuff we did. We did a cooking class, you know, at an Indian family's house, which was amazing. We did get swarmed one day by a bunch of Indian, which, you know, I thought that would happen a lot more, but there was one particular day where there was just loads of them looking at us going, who are these very white tourists? A lot of people asking for pictures, all the things I expected that would happen, but, like, not in a bad way, in a very endearing way. And it was, you know, it was so fun. I had the best time, and I would definitely go back to India. And I think, Steph, Yes. You would go back to India. I love this.
We're doing it. We're going together. We're going to go live from India.
Yes.
That's my plan.
That's our next episode. We'll be in India. No, I can't afford to go back to India right now. Yeah,
I'm like, we'll put it in the pipeline.
Yeah.
All right. Beautiful. Well, it warms my heart that you loved it because I was personally invested in your experience of it. So this makes me so happy. And I hope for anyone who kind of had it, you know, they thought, oh, I'd love to go to India, but, you know, it makes them a bit uneasy because of different culture, different experiences, and the things people say, maybe, you know, we've encouraged you a little more to just give it a go.
Yeah. And even if it's not India, other countries, other
anywhere.
Places, if it hasn't really, you know, you're not sure, take it from me, just go and experience something different, I think. And sometimes you might not like it. You'll come back and go, you know what, I'm good. But
live and learn.
It's living and learning and just seeking out new adventures, because again, sometimes you don't know what you actually will enjoy. So, but I think that's it then for this week. We fit a lot in. I think we did. Yeah. So let us know if you guys have been to India. What have been your favorite spots? Where should we go next when Steph and I go together?
All right. See y'all next time.
All the Shit I've Learned Abroad is a travel podcast focused on anything and everything related to travel. You can listen to us on multiple platforms, from iTunes to Google Play Music and more. And with that, please, if you have a chance, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or whatever platform you listen on. That drives us up the charts and really, really helps us out. Want to support us on Patreon? Find us over at Shit I've Learned Abroad Pod. Donations start as low as just $1. Also, if you could follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Shit Abroad Pod and Facebook by searching All the Shit I've Learned Abroad. Thanks so much for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.